This is Nathan Long, president of Saybrook University. I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Saybrook Insights. I'm joined today by one of our esteemed faculty members, Dr. Gina Belton. Gina serves as adjunct faculty member for Saybrook University, as well as a co-chair for our Faculty Senate. Gina has joined us today to talk about grief. And before we get into that, Gina, would you like to do a brief introduction about yourself, your background, and what you've been doing at Saybrook, just briefly?
Sure. Thank you, Nathan, for this opportunity to talk about grief, something that I think is really at the forefront of our hearts right now. As you mentioned, I am psychology faculty and PhD psychology program, the existential humanistic specialization. And as a transdisciplinary scholar, I teach across the university, including courses in the transformative social change. As a thanatologist, I practice existential medicine in my work that is palliative psychology. Now, before you ask, thanatology is the science and study of death and dying from multiple perspectives, medical, physical, psychological, spiritual, multicultural approaches and awareness, ethical issues, and more. Professionals in a wide range of disciplines apply principles of thanatology to inform their work, from doctors and coroners to hospice workers and, of course, grief counselors. There are also thanatology specialists who focus on a specific aspect of the dying process or work directly with people facing their own death or that of a loved one. And this is where I land. My private practice work focuses on tending to folks experiencing life-limiting illness, the complex issues of aging, conscious dying, loss, grief, and mourning. I also educate others in these areas, and this includes our own Saybrook students.
That's very good. Thank you, Gina. Could you spell that for us, for our audience, so they know, for those who are interested in reading up more about your particular area, that would be helpful.
Sure. Thanatology is thanatology.
Great. And do you have a couple intro websites or suggestions that you might give to individuals?
Yes, actually, to learn a great deal about thanatology is a great resource is the Association for Death Education and Counseling, ADEC. For short, so ADEC.org is a plethora of information in this knowledge of that's deep and wide. It of the human experience. It covers everything from research, writing, scholarly and practical applications. They offer webinars just about weekly, I would imagine. And right now, and as we speak, are most likely developing how do we respond to cataclysmic and catastrophic experiences of loss.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate you again spending just a few minutes of your time with us, and thought maybe I'd kick off our discussion today with just the following question, really. In this time of rapidly changing conditions and uncertainty, I mean, obviously with COVID-19 striking all of our communities, all of our continents, but also with the ensuing economic fallout, how can being aware of our grief be of benefit?
That's a really great question. Namely because I think it would help to begin with understanding that grief is a healthy response to loss. I want to say that again. Grief is a healthy response to loss. And as you mentioned just now, these losses are varied. A lot of us are familiar with the common experience of loss that is a loved one through either death, separation, or divorce. Sometimes losses we feel are experienced with a family member or friend living with a chronic illness, such as dementia. Other kinds of losses are experienced when diagnosed with a life-limiting illness or when we observe decline that can come with aging. We also have feelings of loss during life transitions, such as those in midlife or retirement, or perhaps we may have held a dream for our future close to our hearts and it slips away. Certainly, many of our students may be experiencing some feelings of loss related to the uncertainty of being able to participate in long-awaited rituals like a commencement or completing their field work or practicums. And what I'm hoping you may be hearing here is that being aware of the knowledge that grief is the healthy response to loss, that what all of these losses share is separation. In a relationship, feeling a sense of separation. And so because grief is a whole body experience, any of these experiences that I just talked about can feel disorienting. You may feel angry, confused, and numb, out of balance. And in these moments of rapidly changing conditions, as you point out, we and our students are facing many unexpected losses at an alarming rate, along with the rest of our nation and our global brothers and sisters around the world. I think it's important to know that in the end, we're all survivors of loss that occur in our lives as a result of changes and endings. Sometimes trying to make sense of loss will have it's such a destabilizing experience. We find ourselves wanting to hold on to what's familiar. But when you can't find where you are or navigate the space, it's hard to see that. So of course there's the theoretical. So trying to make sense of primary loss, compound loss, traumatic loss, and secondary experiences of loss. These are all theoretical ways of organizing and knowing the shared human experience. And while theories are helpful, they can be helpful to me while educating and researching, and also as a lens for noting where someone I may be working with, where they might be in the landscape of their grief. For the one who's navigating this whole body reality, responding with a theory is not very helpful. The complexity and uniqueness of every human's grief, just like our birth and our dying, doesn't often welcome or respond to a linear approach. It's critical for me as an end-of-life practitioner and all of us who may be entering into this work to show up with our whole selves, to pay attention and be still, a compassionate companion and an empathic witness when meeting another human suffering in this moment. And I'd like to include us in ourselves. You know, those of us, you know, Saybrook is grounded in this transformative work of human care and compassion. And often we forget to include ourselves in the line, right, of response. And so I think it's important to remember that when we're how to be an empathic witness to ourselves. My lived experience is grounded in my traditional and indigenous lineages. And this way of being informs how I welcome the suffering that's inherent in the end-of-life experience. And when I'm able, I share this with the students and the community that I work with. And so because of this worldview, when I'm feeling troubled, bewildered, or overwhelmed by life, I tend to reach out to those wiser than I, right? I look to those wise elders who have somehow survived just being human. And one of these wise elders is my mentor, psychologist Dr. Charles Garfield. He's the founder of Shanti International and also a core founding faculty of the Mehta Institute. This is where I studied and trained in contemplative mindful approaches with tending the dying. Charlie is fond of saying that Freud commented, "Everywhere I go, I found that a poet has been there before me." And I'm sure that we can all attest to this truth of the statement by picking up any volume written by any of our favorite poets. You know, and it reminds me, Freud's comment reminds me of a particular poem that I used to share with the grief groups I led while working with hospice. And I just find it to be such an elegant description of what it is to be a compassionate companion in the most tender of human experiences, that is loss. And if it's okay with you, Nathan, I'd like to share it with you now.
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you. Please.
Great. I have another one that I'm saving up for you at the end. But this one, when we think about what can seem like some ethereal notion of being a compassionate companion, what does that really mean? And this poem that was written, in the 1500s by a monk, St. John of the Cross, and it's called A Rabbit Noticed My Condition. I was sad one day and went for a walk. I sat in a field. A rabbit noticed my condition and came near. It often does not take more than that to help at times, just to be close to creatures who are so full of knowing, so full of love, that they don't chat. They just gaze with their marvelous understanding.
You know, you beautifully outlined, I think, this relationship of grief and facing the unexpected and trying to make sense of, you know, both the loss and the changing conditions that are affecting us all. And certainly this has been going on since human history began, for sure. But we're in a particularly acute time. And I guess I'd like to hear from you a little bit about what purpose can a mindful experience of grief really offer us with understanding the experience of loss, of change during this pandemic?
Thanks for that question. And I really appreciate how St. John's little rabbit really points us to exactly that, a mindful experience, right? And a mindful awareness of our grief and loss, in my experience, invites us to be able to gaze at our own reality and experience and that of others with a gentle curiosity and a marvelous understanding. It's an invitation to hold tenderly not just the suffering of others, but our own and the intense pain of love after loss. Now, that's a funny thing to hear, right? Mm-hmm. The intense pain of love after loss. Mm-hmm. And I'm remembering when I was mentoring a social work student with her community project, and she asked me, isn't it hard to listen to everyone's sad stories all the time? I get that a lot, you know. Oh, you're a grief counselor. That must really be hard. That's not my experience. I gently offered this student that I wasn't listening to sad stories all day, that in fact my hours are filled with being a witness to love stories. This is what I find so profoundly, not just moving and meaning-making, but transformative for the one whose story is being witnessed, but also for myself as I'm showing up for these folks who are courageously turning toward that just human, tender experience. And this is the truth that our grief is speaking in those moments, right? That grief and love are sisters, woven together from the beginning. Their kinship reminds us that there's no love that does not contain loss, and no loss that is not a reminder of the love we carry for what we once held close. I wish that was my bit of wisdom, but it's actually the wisdom from Frances Weller, who's a very soulful author and grief worker. He invites us to consider, or at least open up to, a mindful awareness of our grief. And to open up to grieving mindfully is just another way of inviting us to consciously be aware of the intense pain of love after loss. Mm-hmm. Many of us may know of this teacher, but the well-known Buddhist teacher and scholar Jack Kornfield reminds us that when we grieve, we allow ourselves to feel the truth of our pain and the measure of betrayal or tragedy in our life. By our willingness to mourn, we slowly acknowledge, integrate, and accept the truth of our losses. It takes courage to grieve. It takes courage to grieve, to honor the pain we carry. We can grieve in tears or in meditative silence, in prayer or in song. In touching the pain of recent and long-held griefs, we come face-to-face with our human, genuine human vulnerability, with helplessness and hopelessness. You know, these are the storms of the heart, he says. These words by Jack Kornfield brought me such comfort in my own experiences of trying to meet the uncertainty. You know, we were talking about right before this our little conversation started about how are we getting along, and you know, it's hard to know how to you navigate the landscape of vulnerability, helplessness, and hopelessness. And I'm not feeling hopeless yet, but it is difficult to be in the moment. But simply put, you know, grieving mindfully allows us to experience the intensities of our loss while not indulging them. It's just helpful to know, because I think that there's a common misunderstanding that mindfulness means to indulge something. And it means just to be able to engage in a process of allowing our emotional vulnerability, not so that we suffer greater distress or to intensify our pain, but to come into contact with this suffering in such a way that it allows us to ride the waves. As I alluded to earlier, when I was running grief groups in hospice, just about everybody would talk about the waves and how they come. And sometimes they're a gentle little wave just lapping at your toes. And oftentimes it would be a sneaker wave, as we call them up here. It'll just cut you off at the knees. And I think it's safe to say that right now the waves we're feeling might be akin to a tsunami to many of us. Uh-huh. And we're still really early in the pandemic, and the local and national and global implications are still yet to be determined. And the conditions are changing all the time. So being mindful as those conditions are changing are supportive in our capacity to be with what just keeps arising. And of course, more serious problems are surely ahead. And I would hope that our shared vulnerabilities will be a portal of entry to making sense of our experience together. And it's an invitation, you know, before us, that as we navigate our collective losses and experience our shared grief, that we do our best to remember that while many of the social aspects of our lives are being canceled, we feel that loss, humanity hasn't been canceled. You know, our compassion has not been canceled. Our creativity has not been canceled. So in the shock waves of our global experience of collective grief, and I can tell you through the experience of these many years practicing as a grief counselor, we're not quite at that place yet of being able to grieve. As we can well have seen the reports coming out of Italy, families couldn't even participate in your usual rituals, right? I mean, just the pages and pages of obituaries. So even the usual rituals that support us in our grief are unavailable to us. But I'm hoping that we collectively share the experience, we're witnessing the deep creativity that arises when we recognize that we all share this animal body of grief. I'm sure many people are on social media right now just trying to stay connected. And it's filled with examples of humanity reaching out to each other and sharing our vulnerabilities and anxieties and stories from being practicing safer at home and the physical distancing, and even some who are quarantined, and folks are uploading resources and sharing how they're dealing with their anxieties and fear. And one of the things that has been most filling up for my soul and my healing in this moment is the music that is literally filling the air right now. In choirs
so beautiful,
of voices.
Right? Oh yes.
Isn't it amazing? It's so humbling. I was listening to Steve Martin, the comedian?
Yeah.
He's a banjo player, right? He's posted this beautiful little banjo moment that was so sweet. It was like listening to a babbling brook, you know, that just the cheerfulness, the upliftedness of that of those strings was, it was a really humbling and precious moment.
It was beautiful. I don't know if you've seen the most recent, it's called the Pub Couch Choir, I believe is what it's called. It's worth a look for our listeners. And if you haven't seen it, my wife just showed it to me this morning, and it was just such a beautiful thing. 2,000 people from all over the country, maybe the world, submitted their vocal verses to this one woman who compiled all of it together and created a virtual chorus. And it was, the song was Close to You. And so what a beautiful, you know, articulation in music to how people both are responding. Maybe this is an inaccurate way to put this, but, you know, responding in grief and loss, but also in great love, and how they're, you know, since grief and love are sisters, right? You know, it's such a beautiful way to do that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
No, I think that's love. I'm just agreeing with you wholeheartedly with your insight there, Nathan. I really appreciate that. And I just find that that's I'm going to look for that choir actually, and it made me think of, you know, the image that came to my mind was remember Horton Hears a Who, and how all the little Who's kept saying we're here, and it feels like that's what we're doing for each other right now in this moment, trying to remind each other that we're here and we're here for each other. You know, in this time of shocking, catastrophic loss and grief and uncertainty with the unknown. And so if we can keep being creative and reaching out to each other and sharing with each other, the knowing that we're here, through song and song, I'll back up a little bit to music. There's so many cultures and wisdom traditions where music and song and dance are such integral parts of the mourning process. And I can't imagine the lament that must be under the surface for us now, or maybe bubbling up. Who knows? Maybe this experience is the earth's lament and we're finally listening. You know, it's a humbling awareness. So, yeah, my greatest hope in this moment, like I was saying earlier, is that our faculty and students that are navigating personal and shared losses, that we'll remember how far kindness toward ourselves and others can be a healing balm in times of catastrophic loss. Grief and loss is our teacher, an initiation to kindness. And I think a lot of those songs and choirs are a way of showing kindness to each other.
I couldn't agree more. I know you want to share a poem with us before we close. Just, you know, you've brought up some really tangible, great ideas around how we experience grief and loss and also love. Could you talk to us a little bit about, you know, some actionable ideas that individuals can do to reach out in times of crisis and need?
Yeah, that's not a small question. Well, I'm going to take my lead from what I've been observing amongst my colleagues and how we've been navigating that ourselves through social media. Boy, it almost feels like finally social media is presenting itself as what it had aspired to be, which is a medium to actually connect us all. But I don't want us to just count on that either. When folks first heard the word social distancing and shelter at home, those all really clanged for me, and I know for many others. And it didn't take very long for folks to start working with the language. And language is important when we're wanting to shift consciousness and open up to new experiences. And so the fact that it was transformed from social distancing to physical distancing, I thought was more accurate. And so then the folks that are most vulnerable, there are many vulnerable folks we're starting to find out, right, as we gather more and more data around this pandemic. It was first believed that the most vulnerable were those who are also most isolated, which is our aging population. And to meet that without further isolating them had presented itself as a challenge early on. And many folks in that age group aren't, you know, tech savvy. So just relying on one of the things my daughter's doing where she lives in the Mendocino Coast in this little tiny town of Gualala is, you know, picking up the telephone, starting a phone tree. Folks through their houses of worship are looking through their list of parishioners and making phone calls and reaching out. And I'm finding that right now the phone has become very vital in weaving a web of connection again, reconnection between seniors, our wise elders, and the youngers. Folks have been showing up with groceries for those who haven't been able to make it to the grocery store. I appreciate that locally, my small town, I'm hoping other towns might be able to consider this, to create hours that of shopping that would respond just to those vulnerable populations. So like there's 2 hours every morning where just seniors are allowed to go into the grocery stores and do their shopping unencumbered. But, you know, just the... Boy, what it used to mean to be a good neighbor is seems to be what's needed right now.
It is. You just gave some fantastic examples. I mean, we're seeing it all over our area here in greater LA with individuals running errands for those who are holed up with either coronavirus or the flu or cold and cough, to the elderly, to those who are just not sure about going out at all. It's been a beautiful thing to see that happen. The kindness of strangers who are recognizing the impact of these times and really making those efforts to engage in that in love, despite, or I guess, in addition to the loss that they're experiencing. Well, Gina.
Yes.
Thank you so much again. I'd love for you to share your poem with us. I think it's a great way to close this out today. And I really appreciate you being here and sharing your wisdom. And I hope that this has been a wonderful opportunity for those of our listeners to understand a bit more about grief and loss and coping in these challenging times. So, Gina, I'll turn it back over to you.
Oh, thank you, Nathan. I really appreciate this opportunity to share in connection and community. So, I'd like to end with this poem that many people are familiar with. And for me, it's taken up a great deal of meaning. And it's an invitation, I feel, to soulful connection and meaning making that can only be arrived at when we come to know loss. And it's called Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. We can thank Naomi Shihab Nye for the beautiful wisdom.
Beautiful. Thank Dr. Belton, thank you. All right. Be well. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And with that, we'll conclude this episode of Saybrook Insights.